The views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Welcome to a brand new edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc. And as they say, I'm a little under the weather. I don't know who they are, and I really don't know how under the weather got to be not feeling well, but that's the way it's happening right now. You know, I could have waited a few days and, you know, charged my batteries and cleared my throat a bit, but no, I'm behind on the podcast thing still. Hopefully I'll catch up next week. That seems to be my running phrase. So I thought I'd put it together now. And don't worry, our interview portion was done when I was feeling better. So I'm not feeling that well now, but back then it was just coming on. So I sounded a bit better. I don't know why I said that. I just thought I'd throw that out there. How are you doing? You doing fine? Have you succumbed to any, late fall type illness? No, I didn't get the flu shot. It's not a conspiracy thing for me. I just didn't get it. The past few years, I didn't get it and I didn't get the flu. Call me lucky, I guess. But in any case, this is not exactly the flu, more of a heavy duty cold. That's what we'll call it. And don't forget, Club ADHD, the podcast brought to you by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. Visit their website for lots of information and a connection to something that's going on with CADAC and will go on for the next year and a half or so. It's an effort to band our voices together and create one huge voice. It's called ADHD Speaks. I'm on there giving my thoughts out. We'd like to hear from you. Yeah, your story. Just take your cell phone and, you know, point it towards you and video an excerpt of your life. Tell us about your ADHD. It doesn't have to be long. Could be a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. If you don't feel comfortable about showing your face, do it from the neck down. Or send us an audio. Or send your written story. Just go to kadak.ca for more information. Boy, my voice is not sounding great. I had something planned. I was going to tell you what happened last weekend. I got up this morning, did what I had to do, you know, a few things, and then I went back to bed. And as I was lying in bed, I was thinking, I've got to get this podcast done. I do. So I was thinking, okay, what am I going to do for my opening? And I already thought about this before. I happened to MC an international event last weekend, and my ADHD really kicked in. It was a sporting event, something I'm passionate about. It was badminton related for World Juniors Championship. The World Badminton Federation was hosting it in the Toronto area. Actually, it was Badminton Ontario that was the co-host there too. In any case, my ADHD did kick in. There were some situations there where I really had to try to get focused, and when you know you have ADHD, it puts even more pressure, at least when I look at it, because I want to make sure things are right. But no, I'm not going to go into that direction, although I did touch upon it right now. For some reason, as I'm lying in bed, I thought about our cat. We have one cat. And to say that I'm a cat person, not really, you know. I got the cat because of our kids, who were in their teens at the time. They lost, we lost our other cat. Didn't lose him. He passed away. So I thought I'd be the hero and I'll go get a kitten. And I did. And yes, I'm the guy who vacuums and all that stuff. And I look at some of our furniture. Oh, the cat did a number on it. So am I a cat person? Not exactly. Am I a dog person? I like dogs. Would I want one in the house all the time? No, not really. Again, for the same reason why I'm not crazy about having a cat in the house at all times. And our cat is a house cat. Then I got to thinking, how can I connect this with ADHD? I was thinking, what if we ADHDers could be more like cats? What do I mean by that? Well, You take a dog, okay? A dog is always looking for your attention, your positive vibes, your approval, right? Most dogs do. They'll do anything to get your attention, to get you to, you know, acknowledge them. A cat, on the other hand, more independent. Sure, sometimes they'll come around, they want to get a petting or whatever, but our cat is like that. But when he's had enough of you stroking his fur, he'll bite you. He doesn't care. For the most part, our cat tries to get our attention, or my attention especially, when it comes to feeding time. And that's just about it. The litter box, well, if it's full, well, that's for us to deal with. But no, he just likes it. Likes to get my attention when it comes time to be fed. He likes to be petted, of course, but, you know, as I say, he'll bite me when he's done. A dog, for the most part, I've had dogs when I was younger. They don't do that. And I guess we're more like dogs, we ADHDers. We're looking for approval, right? We'll do just about anything to make you like us. Whereas a cat, independent, you don't like me? Tough bananas. No, that would be for monkeys. No, it doesn't seem to matter to a cat. To a dog, different story. So if only we could be more like dogs. And why I was thinking about this while lying in bed, not feeling well, I don't know. Maybe I was delirious. I thought I'd throw that out. Well, enough of my rambling. My rambling with my throat being the way it is and my voice and all that stuff. Let's get on to the interview portion of the program. When it came to connecting with Linda, it was a bit of a weird situation. Well, not weird, but strange, because I was looking for someone to interview for this podcast, and I came across your name, and you told me that you were just thinking about who can interview me for a podcast, right?
That's right. I was actually looking online, and I hadn't found you yet, but it's just so cool that you called, Russ. Thanks so much.
Well, no problem. I mean, you know, it's a kinetic type thing. I was focused on Wisconsin.
In the cold. Oh. It's going to be a hot spell into the 40s this week, so yes. We're excited.
Oh, man. I just want to first start by asking you about your ADHD, and when were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed in my, I can't remember the year, surprise, surprise, but it was my late 20s, early 30s.
How did that happen? Were you struggling before, or did someone notice something?
Well, you know, I struggled my whole life. My parents told me their first indication there was something different about me is when I was about 2 years old, standing up in church singing Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog and jumping from pew to pew, and struggled all through high school, all through school, just, you know, she doesn't pay attention, right. Should be doing a better job. And then, you know, even all through my adult life. So I came to be diagnosed, actually, because I was driving my roommate absolutely up the wall, leaving the water on, backing into the garage, driving through stop signs. And so she was in therapy for depression and anxiety. And her psychiatrist actually pretty much diagnosed me. And then she didn't have to go to therapy anymore, and I did.
So you were the cause of her depression?
I was the cause of her depression because she is kind of OCD, and I just drove her crazy.
So after that, what was it, a revelation, or how did you handle it?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm in the testing center, and the lady who's doing the testing, I had to do the thing with they flash light or flash different colors, and you've got to click them when the red one's on and not click it when the yellow one's on, something like that. And I was so impulsive, I only got like 17 out of 100 correct. And then I had to do one where they had different shapes, and you had to copy them looking at it. He did really well with that. Then they took it away. And 10 minutes later, after a bunch of other stuff, they said, now draw that. I broke into tears, started crying. The lady who was testing me started crying. crying. And yeah, I can't tell you, I was so relieved that I found there was something wrong with me. I wasn't just a dumb blonde airhead who was just stupid, lazy, crazy. I really had something wrong with me medically that was treatable, that I had some hope. It was great to be diagnosed, actually.
So you found the reason, and with that, you had the hope.
I had the hope, absolutely. Yep, it was a great thing. And then when my doctor started me on medication, he told me, you know, this isn't a cure-all. This will help maybe 20%, which kind of was a bummer, but he said, the rest of that, you need to learn some new skills. Mm-hmm. And even that starting that medication, my whole life I had this dull headache. It was constant headache and the channel changing thing. That was just stress to some extent. But once I started on that medication day one, it was gone. And again, I'm crying going, oh my gosh, there was something chemically wrong with my brain that there's some relief with the medication.
So where did you go from there? You took the information and you know, you mentioned hope, and some people, when they get the diagnosis, they're, you know, euphoric, as you mentioned. But after a while, it settles in, and then they might say to themselves, oh, there is something wrong with me, and they lose hope. What prevented you from losing hope?
Well, for one thing, I'm a counselor. I was an outpatient therapist diagnosing people with this.
Oh.
And part of it was seeing in myself that there was something not quite right. But it gave me hope because I knew that there was a medical reason. I had been teaching strategies to kids and adults who had ADHD. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had some tools that I knew if I started to use those tools that I was going to be better than I was before. And it also helped me with that impulsivity. I understood what that was all about. And then I learned more about nutrition, which helped a lot more with my brain. But in that regard, I had alcohol and alcohol problem for, you know, years. And that helped me too, to once that brain calmed down and I didn't have all that anxiety and I had the ability to manage my impulsivity better, I was able to quit drinking. And just, you know, be very grateful for the spiritual thing there, because certainly God was a part of my whole recovery process. But it was the accepting of the things I couldn't change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And I choose in my life to look at my issues, whatever they might be, as a blessing so that I can help other people like you're doing to gain some hope. Which is why my organization's called the Faucet of Hope. I think we all have stuff to spew out on other people
that
we are given. Yeah. So I'm grateful because I have been able to change probably thousands of people's lives and give them hope because they don't think they're just stupid and hopeless. They have something they can do with that problem that they have, whatever it might be.
Now, scholastically, you're no slouch. You have a master's degree. Did this happen before or after your diagnosis?
It happened in the midst of it. I was not one who could sit in class, which is why I'm sure my high school guidance counselor never suggested going to college. I just couldn't focus and concentrate. I couldn't remember things. So fortunately, a friend of mine from church who was also a college career counselor recommended to me that the University of Superior had a extended degree program that I could do at home on my own time, on my own terms. I was a single mom with a 2-year-old, and I functioned better with my hyperactivity at night a lot of times. I wake up at 3 a.m, and that's sometimes my best focus time. So I tried that. I took one class. I got an A. I took another class. I got an A and went, hey, I enjoy this. I could do it on my terms. And that's why those of us with ADHD, yes, we are, brains are faster than normal. I love that book. There's a book out there. And it's to my advantage. If you know how to harness that, it really worked to my advantage. And I learned a lot of different strategies to use in order to get through school. And boy, I graduated with a 3.7 from undergrad and grad school doing it differently, because I'm differently abled. I'm not disabled, right, like a lot of people see themselves. I'm differently abled, and I just need to know how to use those tools and to my advantage.
You bring up a good point, because as we all know, we aren't lacking when it comes to learning. We just learn in a different way, and we need a different environment. And for you, it was late at night.
Exactly. And yep. For me, that's the case. Yep.
The quicker that teachers understand this, or maybe the superintendents or the principals or whomever, they understand that, yeah, we can learn. We just need to learn a little differently. The better we'll all be.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I actually lost a job as a school counselor because I created such a ruckus after I was diagnosed. I was a school counselor at that time. And I realized how many of these kids didn't have, you know, mental behavioral problems. They weren't just, you know, disturbed, you know, horrible behavior problems. They had the same thing I did. So I started to advocate for those kids, referred them for help to psychiatry, and then started to help to implement the 504 accommodation plan, which we have here in the United States. I don't know what you guys have there in Canada, but here it's a law. They have to accommodate people. And boy, I'll tell you, the teachers were not happy. They did not want these ADD kids sitting in the front of the room. They did not want to have to, you know, give them an assignment for the second time because they lost the first one. But once we got that implemented, man, these kids really shined. And the teachers did realize, wow, making some of these changes can really help. So some of them were really thankful. Others, not so much.
So you got laid off because of this? You were, you know, rocking the boat, or what happened there?
Yeah, there were a lot of other things going on. I'm an advocate through and through because of my own experiences and issues. I just advocate. So I was constantly advocating for the kids that they would rather expel or suspend from school and some other stuff. But, you know, it was fine. It led me into being an outpatient therapist for kids with disabilities, helping their parents, and then going back into the school and implementing strategies and independent education plans for those kids that, you know, we kind of became part of their treatment plan, but also a legal requirement that the school had to follow through on.
Yeah.
And that was good. I enjoy doing that. I enjoy ruffling feathers to some extent.
Speaking of ruffling feathers, when you were ruffling those feathers, was it just the fact that they didn't want to be bothered to handle this, or they didn't believe that ADHD was real?
Both. Some of them just thought it's an excuse. And I still hear that after all these years of education. It's just an excuse for people to be lazy or to, you know, not do what they're supposed to do or to act out. So that was part of it. The other part of it was, you know, they didn't want to have to do it. They felt that they can't give special treatment. I find this in the employment world because I also do corporate training for employers to help them make accommodations for people. And it's not fair. And my take on it, it's not fair to give every individual an individual plan, because we're all differently abled, not just us ADD folks, but everybody else. So that's kind of my take on it. I go into schools and businesses and wherever else people will have me, and I train them on what our National Department of Substance Abuse and Mental Health calls the mental health friendly workplace. So that's what I do, helping to people create a environment that does away with the stigma and helps them to make some simple changes. It may be doing a split shift, doing a flexible schedule, having someone mentor or help them even tutoring them, or I used to have accommodations where I had people to help me get organized. Mm-hmm. I had one person that all they did was do my calendar because I couldn't keep my calendar straight. So those simple things, they don't cost money. It's just a matter of a different paradigm. And one of my supervisors called me a paradigm pioneer, unafraid to challenge the status quo. So in other words, yeah, annoying people is what I do.
I got to give you a round of applause for that. I never applauded someone who annoys people, but I'm doing it now. About the people who actually, you know, bring you in as an employer and you make the changes? What's their response once those changes are made?
Well, they're totally amazed at it. What it does is a lot of things. It minimizes retention. It significantly increases productivity because people have those simple accommodations. They simply function better on the job. They want to be there. They feel valued. They feel hopeful. They feel like they've got a purpose and somebody who really cares about them enough to understand what they have to offer. So once they realize what a difference this can make and how much cheaper it's going to be, they love it. They love it. It's just really hard to get into them to see that because so many people have that. That's not the way we operate. Well, okay, go ahead. Sure. You know, we want to spend $270 billion in the United States for people with mental health and substance abuse issues, and you don't want to deal with it? Okay, go ahead, spend the money. But I've got a solution that would really help if you just would at least hear me out, because it works.
That's the thing. I mean, some of these people think that they're, you know, yeah, I'm already a good corporate citizen. Why bother doing this? But if they only realize that it could affect their bottom line, that they could actually benefit from this.
Right. And that's the key. It's a proven fact that implementing the stress training and the mental health and substance abuse training to teach the administration and the frontline people how to deal with these people, how to support them, it would be unbelievably financially beneficial to them. So I give them lots of examples. For example, here's one. In the last 3 months, I have helped 6 people get a job at a very high-paying factory. $17 an hour they're starting for pay. Wow. None of them, only 2 of them have maintained because the requirements are so crazy and there's absolutely no flexibility. And that I met with a lady yesterday and she said, that is not the way we do it here. If people can't handle a 72-hour rotating shift when they come in, they shouldn't be applying. I'm like, that's insane. You know, and to know offer no accommodations for someone who is struggling, it just doesn't make sense because it costs them, I figured out, about $20,000 per person at that income level to hire and retrain a new person. So it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But, you know, I'm an out-of-the-box thinker. I know what worked for me. I know why I didn't take a $3,000 a year job because my boss accommodated me. That is the only reason I didn't switch companies was because he valued me. He let me work that flexible schedule. He let me work from home on days that work better for me. So it does matter, and employers would find that if they would do it. But a lot of them just don't know how. Yeah. It's new to them. It's foreign to them. So it's frustrating, but it is what it is. And I have to work with those who are willing to hear me out and give me an opportunity to help them.
You know, it just sounds like another case of that's the way we've always done it. Don't ask me why, but that's the way we're going to do it.
Exactly. Yeah? Exactly. I thought about that this morning, actually. I'm cutting the ham for our Thanksgiving dinner.
And ham? What about the turkey?
You know what? We just get tired of turkey. I eat chicken all the time here. So we're blowing it today on ham.
I like ham.
But the ham was too big for the pan. And my mom always used to say, yeah, well, we'd cut the ham. You know, we always cut the end off of the thing. No matter how big it was, they always cut the end off of the roast. And I'm like, why do you do that, Mom? She said, well, I don't know. Grandma always did. So she called Grandma. Well, grandmas didn't have a big enough pan. And so that, I think, is okay. What happened. Yeah. It had nothing to do with it tasting good. It's that she just never had a big enough pan for the size of meat that she'd buy. And that's how I think our society is. They don't know. They've always done it that way, even though it makes no sense. They have no logical reason for it. But that's how we've always done it. And I'm not that way. I do not function that way. And don't want to.
So if maybe thinking just as an employer, maybe if we went in and just said, do you want to be able to make X amount more dollars or save dollars, then here's how. Would that strategy work better?
Yeah, you know, I've tried a lot of different ways to market this training that I do. Mental health friendly workplace, they don't get that.
No.
They don't get that. So the one that I just put out and sent an email on is the no stress, nobody quits workplace. Well, of course, people are like, yeah, right, no stress and nobody quits. But at least it gets them curious enough to wonder what the heck is she talking about? And then where there's very little financial investment needed for that kind of thing, it certainly does get them curious. Sure. And employers who have come to my trainings, I had one employer, and it was a free thing. I was still working for the State Department and did a free training. He said, I've only got one complaint. This was a phenomenal training, but he said, you should have charged everybody $150, because if you don't charge, they don't think it's a value.
That's right.
And that's kind of hard. It's kind of hard for me. I've always worked in nonprofit and always like to give what, you know, God's given me.
Right.
So it's hard for me to charge, but it's really true, especially corporate. They expect people to charge the big bucks for the good training. So, you know, I don't know. I just keep trying. I'm working on a book right now called How to Save America $1 trillion by Doing Away with Normal, by eliminating normal. Because who's normal?
What
is normal? There isn't such a thing. I love Peter Shankman. He wrote a book, Faster Than Normal, for those of us with ADHD. And there's lots of those kind of books out there using the word normal, but I don't think there is such a thing. And I think as long as we have some criteria that we're measuring people on, we are never going to do justice to the rest of the world, to our employees, to our students, because from the time we're born and come out of the womb, we're measured on an Apgar scale as to whether or not we're normal or abnormal or below average or above average. Right. And it never, ever changes. Everything is measured on some judgment. I actually called the special education director for the school district around here yesterday. I talked with her and said, you know, what about this training to help teachers understand? She said, well, we're really not doing anything with the mental health and substance abuse. We're really focusing on academics. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, you can focus on all the academics and shove all the stuff at me on history and math and science you want. If you don't deal with my underlying struggle with those things and my attitude I had, screw it, I can't do this, I'm not even going to try. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get the academic results that you're looking for. Kids need to be understood and valued and supported in what they love to do and what they're good at. And then maybe you'll get them to do some of this other junk that really probably isn't even necessary. I mean, why do we need to know what year the Battle of the Bulge was in or, right, you know, a country was founded, really? Does it really matter? No, it matters how we treat each other, how we respect each other, and how we value ourselves and others. That's what makes the world a safe, peaceful place to be. Not how much we know about history and math and science. So That's the other reason I'm not necessarily received well in the academic world, because my paradigm shift that I kind of am pushing is not easy for everybody to lay hold of. So it is what it is. But keep trying. There are those who do take that challenge on and go, yeah, hey, we can do this. We're going to try it. And sure enough, it works for some, at least some people it works.
You've got my ADHD mind going here, because when you were talking and you were, you know, referring to people who don't get it and people who do get it, I just visualize that when you go into an employer, hand them a life jacket and say, put this on because I'm going to rock the boat.
That's a great strategy. Oh my gosh, I love that. That's a really good thing. I need to get more humor in my presentations, because I get so wound up that sometimes I'm too serious. But if all I did was talk about the crazy things I've done in my life that I put in my book that I wrote, it's a hoot, the stuff that happens to us.
Yeah.
For example, probably the story that is most really gets people going is, I was at my grandson's 16th birthday party, and there was like 40 people there, and he's my step grandson, and I am constantly losing my keys. So, of course, I couldn't find my keys. I could have swore I put them in my front pocket. I even knew where I put them, but I looked and looked. They weren't in my front pocket. So we're going around. They're trying to bust into my car, which is already all busted up from all the other people that had tried to break into it. And finally, one of the old guys there, he said, well, there's your pants. There they are. They're right in your pants, right? You know, the right. And I had stuck them in my pants instead of in my pocket. So my grandson comes back and he said, well, have you found your keys yet? And just not thinking how it might sound, I said, yeah, Uncle Jim found them down my pants.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a hoot. So everybody's hysterical. And that's when my stepdaughter stepped forward. She said, that's it. You have to write a book. You've got to write a book about all this stuff, because they had followed me around, you know, for all the years that I'd had my stepkids in my home going, oh, my God, how does she function? Constantly looking, driving through stop signs, driving up the wrong way after I've lived here 30 years. But, you know, a lot of people would have shame and embarrassment and would have left that thing with everybody laughing. And in previous days, prior to appreciating my ADHD, I would have probably gone home and cracked open a bottle of wine and slammed it for the rest of the night. But by this point, I laughed along with them and went, oh my God, this is great. Another thing to put in my next book. So I look at everything that happens to me as an opportunity. And I try to keep track of it so I can share it with others and go, you know what? You're not alone. There's so much comfort. And I really appreciate what you're doing. Appreciate what you're doing, Russ, to make this awareness known and to have people on that can share their experience, strength, and hope with people, so we don't all go, you know, oh my gosh, I'm the only one in the world going through this. No, not at all. There's tons of us out here going through this.
Linda, I just thought of a book title here, my ADHD mind, again, working overtime. I can just visualize it now. Life Without Pockets.
Life Without Pockets. Oh, my gosh. I love that. Life Without Pockets.
It's just kicking in here. I don't know what's going on. Must be all that cheese and stuff coming out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, gotta be that. Well, I'll tell you, my grandkids wouldn't necessarily like me not having pockets, because when they come and help me clean the closet or clean my room, they're always finding tons of money. And my husband, too, if my laundry's down there, he didn't even tell me when he finds a $20 or a $50 bill in my pocket, which is not very often, but it has been done. Has been done.
Now, you mentioned something interesting that I didn't focus in on, but I want to. The faucet of hope. What's that all about?
Well, I guess, like I said, I view us, each and every one of us, as just, you know, God's gift to the world. And if we just open ourselves up for all the good things that come our way, that whether it's the people that comes into our lives or whether it's things that happen, if I can just open myself up to let that stuff go out to someone else. Have the courage to be vulnerable like I'm doing today, to share what has happened to me. The people that are out there dying of thirst, hoping for somebody to give them something that is going to give them some nourishment, some relief, that could be me. It is you. It is them. So I guess I liken it to a faucet in that it doesn't matter whether the faucet, I grew up on a farm, and I'll tell you what, when we're out baling hay and I'm thirsty, I don't really care if the only drink is the hose that's sitting in the cow tank or even the water that's in the cow tank. It's not going to kill me. I'm going to drink it if I'm that thirsty that I need something to drink. And so I guess I look at some people are like, oh, I'm not good enough to do that. I'm not good enough to share my story. But I'll tell you, everybody's story is valuable. And if we don't take that risk, other people aren't going we're not going to be able to bless them with that story. So it doesn't matter if we're old or rusty or too new and not broke in. It doesn't really matter. And the other, going further in the analogy, a faucet can't function on its own. A faucet needs to be connected to water. It needs to be tuned up sometimes. You need a plumber. You need somebody to turn the spigot on. And that's what we are to each other. Right now, you're the faucet for me to give me the opportunity to spew out my stuff. To pour out to other people the gifts that I've been given and the hope that I have for other people. And I'm hoping there's somebody out there that is going, oh, my God, that is me. That is wonderful. Thank you for sharing. That's what it's all about. And then the other thing people don't realize is that we don't think about, oh, I've never done anything to help anybody else. But listen, everybody who may be listening to the call, think about the last person that called you and said, I'm not doing well. I need a ride to the hospital. Or could you take me to the grocery store? Or I'm really having a hard time. Will you just talk to me? And they don't even ask, but you're there. You are there for them. When nobody else maybe was there. I had one lady at Walmart one day, and we're just doing what I do and said good morning. And she started crying. She said, you're the first person, the only person that has smiled at me today. Oh, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's all it may take. But we have so much more to offer. The other thing, I have alcohol. I'm a previous alcohol and drug addicted person. I also was diagnosed with hypomania type 2 bipolar, which is very similar to ADHD, only a little bit more elevated. And that's another thing. People don't realize that there is oftentimes many other things that go along with ADHD sure. that may be undiagnosed and untreated, or that you're on the wrong medication or not on any medication. Or it, for me, I'm not even on medication. I have learned that gluten is really a bad thing for me. And when I learned what an effect it had on me, which may not have that effect on mm-hmm. others, unbelievable difference when I, am not eating gluten, which unfortunately I have been eating lately. So I'm a lot more wound up than I normally would be. I'm talking faster. I know that. But it does. It calms my mind. The anxiety is just very minimal. So, at this point, I am doing gluten-free for my medication. And I tell you, it's working wonderfully. So everybody's different. Sure. And, fortunately, there's no magic cure. No. There's no magic pill. We need each other to continue to motivate one another and help each other stay focused. And that's what I do as a life coach as well, is help people to, stay accountable, have somebody that's going to be there that they can vent to, and just not, maybe they already know things like I do. You just need to be reminded. And that's an important thing, too. It's okay to be reminded of things.
Linda, what would you say to the person who might be at home or listening in the car or wherever, who are afraid to turn on that faucet because of the thought of people Well, the stigma, the bad stigma that's out there and being branded, you know, unfairly, what would you say to that person?
Well, if you don't take a risk, you don't know. And the fact is, there may be, well, studies show in the sales department, maybe 1 or 2 out of 10 is going to positively respond in some way. Sure. The other 8 might say, you're nuts. No, why are you calling me? I don't want nothing to do with that product. But the same thing goes on with this. There may be, you know, 8 people out of 10 that are going to go, oh my God, she's got ADHD. But I'll tell you what, in this world, at this time, because of people like you, Russ, that are out there sharing their issues and trying to break down that stigma, I tell you, people are going to feel better because there's going to be a lot of people out there who thank them for sharing.
Sure.
Because people need hope. And there's a lot more people out there, not only with ADHD, but with a lot of other mental health issues that need help breaking down the stigma. And I don't hold back with my alcoholism or substance abuse either. I do not hesitate to share that because there's other people who need that example to go, wow, here she is with a master's degree and she's made it this far with those problems. Yeah, it's okay. It's a good thing. I'm grateful because there's a lot of assets to having the things that I do. I'm making a living being a little left to center here and having these issues. And I wouldn't have had the courage to quit my job and do what I do if I didn't have these problems. I would have nothing to go out there and share.
Well, yeah.
In the manner that I do.
Linda, I'm convinced that if we don't go out and tell our story, changes won't happen.
You're exactly right. And we need systemic change in a major sort of way. I truly believe that if we would implement my very simple steps to becoming a faucet of hope, first one being realizing that we are a valuable asset and nobody in the world, nobody has ever or will ever have the opportunity to do what we do because we're the only ones there at that moment when somebody needs that help. And if we aren't doing it, nobody's going to do it. And if the world would realize that every human being out there is an irreplaceable asset, we would not have problems because we wouldn't be judging people. We wouldn't be putting them down. We'd be seeing them as the value that they are, which granted is hard sometimes when we look at certain folks to see them. But a lot of times they're jerks or they're mean or they're bullies because they don't feel valued and hopeful.
Yeah, it's their own problem.
Yep, exactly. And the kids that I love working with and the people are the ones that are oftentimes the most obnoxious, the most frustrating to deal with, because I know what's underneath that. It's a sense of hopelessness and lack of value and lack of purpose. So that's my dream in life, that I could have help everybody feel and understand their purpose in life and figure out their passion, and then how can they get paid to do it. That's my goal.
Linda, with all the people that you've worked with and worked for in helping, can you think of one truly shiny example of a complete turnaround?
Oh, absolutely. And I talk about this guy every time I do a workshop. He was a fellow that I got a call from a probation officer that said, I've got a guy sitting in jail. He got charged with drug dealing. He's not from the area. He was from inner city. He was a African-American guy living in a pretty much white community at that time. He had applied for 14. They had to do 20 applications a week back in those days from jail. And here he is with that background. He didn't even get a call back. So they said, I know you're good at finding things about people that they don't see in themselves. So he came in. He said, well, I said, so tell me your background. Where have you worked? Never worked. I'm like, how did you get to be 25 years old? How did you support yourself? Well, he's a drug dealer. I said, well, were you any good? Well, he's making about $3,000 a week. Well, I've never made $3,000 a week doing anything. So obviously he had some skills. So we look at, the transferable skills of a professional drug dealer that was doing that well? Well, he had customer service and sales. He had supervisory managerial. He had financial management. He knew how to order and transport things and shipping and receiving and packaging and weights and measurements. We had a huge amount of skills, so we put it in skill sets. What business did he did? Well, he owned his own company.
Sure.
So when you look at it in that way, it's really impressive. Now, of course, sending that out to employer, knowing the guy's on an ankle bracelet with felony charges, well, they're just going to see as he's just a BSer and, right, you know, a liar. So we had to do a cover letter that got the truth out there. So his cover letter basically said, I've screwed up my life. I've made a lot of bad choices, kind of in different words. But he said, I really do have all these skills. If you will just give me a chance to prove it to you, I need to turn my life around for myself and my family. Thank you for giving me a chance. And he got a job in a week on that. And he called me 9 years later, had never been in trouble, did not do drugs, and had been elevated to a supervisory position in a manufacturing setting. So his first job was in sales that he got after we did that resume. But that's the biggest story, I guess, for me, that shows how people have to look at themselves differently. He thought he had nothing to offer the right world. And clearly, it's just a matter of viewing ourselves differently, looking at our struggles as assets instead of as negatives, and moving forward with that and sharing that. So his story has transformed hundreds. I mean, I've worked with thousands. I've written over 2,000 resumes, and the lives that those people changed when they viewed themselves differently, got out into the workplace, started sharing their story. I can't even tell you, probably hundreds of thousands of people have been changed because I was willing, wow, to not kill myself in 1976, because I was going to kill myself.
Yeah.
I had a method, means, and a plan to kill myself because I could not change. I could not handle the shame and embarrassment of all the things I'd done and what a mess my life was in.
Wow.
But thank God, a 16-year-old girl said, there's a better way. God has a plan. If you just share your story, things will be different. Just let, you know, God use you to help other people. And here I am 42 years later, changing lives. And I'm so grateful for all the things I've been through. And again, have the opportunity to share that with the rest of the world. So again, thank you, Russ, for what you're doing and giving me a chance. Yeah, it's a real blessing to be able to be on.
I'm going
to
give you another round of applause here. You deserve it. And speaking of, you know, doing away with oneself, I was in that mode at one time too. But I went to the hardware store and I was looking at ropes, and I didn't go through with it. Do you know why?
Why?
Those ropes look too uncomfortable. I kid you not. No, that's not going to work.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I would have probably been wrapping around some silk around the rope to make it more comfortable, but that's going a little beyond. And that's actually what I was going to do. I was going to hang myself in the garage. Yeah, just craziness yeah, that our minds go through.
That's the weird thing, because I'm sure, you know, we don't have anybody that can validate it, unless, of course, they tried and they didn't succeed. The moment that you do this, you jump off a bridge and mid-flight you're thinking, I want to live, or you're hanging from somewhere, and then you decide that, no, I don't want to die, and it's too late. And if people, yeah, can only realize that.
Right. And that, again, is where that hope comes from. And my definition of hope is help. People need help. They need help to look at themselves as valuable. They need Oh, for opportunity. If we don't, like you're doing for me today, if we don't have an opportunity to get our message out there, or to use the gifts we've been given, people, again, they get frustrated and they lose hope. And we need to give people praise, which is, oh, my gosh, great job like you're doing, mm-hmm. with the little applause. And they need the encouragement to, hey, don't give up trying. Yes, you may have had rejections, but don't give up trying, because it'll come around someday. So hope is we have to give that. That just doesn't happen out of the blue. We have to give that hope to people. So, again, very important that we are all doing our part.
Well, I'm putting on my professor hat here, my ADHD professor hat, and I give you an A for helping people. And another round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you, Russ. I appreciate it. Now, I'm just grateful.
It's time for shameful plugs. What would you like to promote? You help people,
well,
you're a coach.
I have a multitude of things that I do, probably too many, which has been hard to focus. But if people want to go to my website, lindalarsonschlitz.com, I offer a free strategy session for anybody that wants to at least explore what I have to offer and get the ball rolling to gain some hope. I guarantee you that in that half hour, 45 minute interview or time together, I will guarantee you that you will hang up the phone feeling better than you did when you called me for the first time. And with that too, you're going to get a ebook of my Ditzy Blonde Fawcett, the book that I wrote, Ditzy Blonde Fawcett, It's a God Thing. You can also, if you want to go to Amazon, you can get that, but I've got an ebook too that I could send you and would be glad to share my experience, strength, and hope with people.
Well, I heard the name Schlitz, and of course, some of us can identify with that. Isn't that the beer that made Milwaukee famous just because it tastes so good?
It absolutely is, and it gets people pretty drunk, too, especially the malt liquor.
Well, Linda, thank you again. I know that you've helped people here, and I urge people to visit your website. And who knows, I'm sure we'll be talking to each other again and get you back on the podcast to see what else is going on.
That would be great. Thanks so much, Russ. Thank you for doing what you do and helping people.
I think that went pretty well. I hope you agree. And Linda, thank you for being so gracious, becoming our interview for this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. Don't forget, Club ADHD, not only the podcast, we have the Facebook page and the Twitter account. Please, if you like what you hear, you like what you see, you like what you experience when it comes to Club ADHD, tell friends. We want to get more people on board. We want to make this big, 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 big. And we have listeners throughout the world, but I want to go beyond that. That didn't sound right. Let's go to Mars. Some people think I'm lost in space, but what can I say? Of course, Club ADHD is brought to you by the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. CADAC, CADDAC.ca is their website. Lots of information there. And of course, ADHD Speaks, the link's there too. Get involved in that if you would, please. I'm involved in it. And I'm not just saying this because I'm involved. I think it's a good thing that if we get everybody to send in their stories, we can group them together and create one big story. Because let's face it, if we don't advocate for us, who else will? When I say us, we ADHDers. Well, that's it for this edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm so glad you could be with us. Join us again next time when I'm feeling much better, hopefully. I'm doing something tomorrow. I'm recording. Well, I won't get into it, but it's ADHD related and it should be very cool. And I'm not talking cold, but, you know, neato. I'll let you know in the next podcast what we're up to. Club ADHD, the podcast, heard every 2 weeks or whenever. Looks like I'm going to have to get caught up again and do one for next week. In any case, have a great day, a great week. Till we meet again, this is Russ LeBlanc saying bye for now.